Welcome to Puentes a la Comunidad, Bridges to the Community. Hello, I'm your host, Emily Guerra. It's an honor and with great pleasure to have as my guest today, calling in from Chicago, Illinois, Luis Alberto Urrea, award-winning, best-selling author of fiction, nonfiction, and poetry, and also a dignitary professor of creative writing at the University of Illinois, Chicago. He's here to talk to us about the Big Read Project in Las Cruces and his latest book, The House of Broken Angels. Congratulations, Luis, and thank you for joining me on Puentes.
I'm so happy to talk to you, Emily.
You're welcome. You were born in Tijuana, Mexico, to an American mother and a Mexican father with an Irish-Mexican grandmother, I understand.
Yeah, on the Mexican side, we're Basque and Irish-Mexicanos.
Por eso es güero. That's why you're blonde, huh?
Por eso, yeah. In Basque, Urrea means golden man.
Well, you definitely are.
A golden man.
You're definitely a true reflection of many of our current immigrants along the U.S. and Mexico border, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
What was the most difficult aspect of this as you grew up?
Oh, well, you know, when I was a little boy, I thought Tijuana was the coolest place on the planet. It was magic. And then we came to San Diego, and I was shocked. I was really shocked to find out that, you know, the gringos weren't really fond of us. I thought, what? What are you talking about? I came out of Tijuana. You know, I spoke Spanish before I spoke English, so I had a Tijuana accent and all that stuff. And all of a sudden, people were calling me all those names that we don't need to repeat, but, you know, the names they have for us. And I was completely shocked. I was thinking, ¿qué?
You were 3 years old when they brought you up?
No, I was between 3 and 4 when we first came because I was dying of tuberculosis. You know, the barrio was wiped out by tuberculosis. My parents brought me to the U.S. Then we settled in a U.S. barrio right near the border, Barrio Logan Heights. And that was the same neighborhood Juan Felipe Herrera came from, the first Chicano poet laureate of the United States. But we were in different parts of the neighborhood, so I never met him till later. No, it was all cool there. It's when we moved farther up, farther north, closer to my mom's people and away from my Tijuana people.
Sort of like into the beautiful north.
Yeah, I kind of went into the beautiful north, yeah, I did. And I thought, hey, these guys don't like me very much.
Well, as a child, would it have been beyond your wildest dreams to have achieved what you have today?
Are you kidding? I would have cried. If you'd gone back in time and told young Luis this, I would have cried. First, I would have said, you're a liar. And then I would have cried because it's everything I hoped for. And honestly, I think you'll understand this. I didn't think we got to do this kind of stuff. You know, coming out of Tijuana, I'm from a little dirt street in Tijuana. It used to be dirt. Now it's all paved and nice. So I guess everybody's dreams come true sooner or later if they keep working. But I didn't think people from Rampa Independencia got to publish books. But look what happened.
That's true. You've written 17 books.
Yeah.
5 nonfiction, 8 fiction, 3 poetry books, and others.
Yeah.
And a Pulitzer Prize finalist for the true story, The Devil's Highway. Wow.
Yeah.
How does that feel?
Well, I wish I'd won it.
Well, you were the finalist, but...
Yeah, maybe if I'd won the Pulitzer, I'd have a penthouse. But it's a super blessing. I'm really happy, you know. And I try to always remember where I come from, and I try really hard to make sure that everything I do on the career path goes back to the young people, the young raza that I come from, you know, and do little stuff, you know. I remember a couple of years ago when I was talking about the Devil's Highway, and I was down in Cruces, and I got to go down to the prison near Santa Teresa to visit the inmates there. And we spent a beautiful day just talking about our hopes and dreams and art. You know, you got to try to give back as much as you can.
So is this something that you tell your students as well and the general public about giving back?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. All the time. Yeah, it's one of my, one of my homies back in California calls me the Pope of Tijuana because I'm always trying to do all this kind of, you know, God work. Sorry about the telephone ringing.
Do you want me to pause?
No, I'll just go away from the phone. You know what's happening is that it just never stops now, all day long, because of this new book. Now the perros are barking. It's just I'm just getting used to hubbub.
So, being that you are now quite popular and famous, let's
famous.
Go back.
Famous, mira.
Mira, mira I think you're famous.
My dog, yeah. My dog thinks I'm famous.
Who were your mentors and your inspiration as a child to write? I read somewhere that you had your tia Teresa, and then your mother.
Yeah,
your mother also read to you.
La Santa de Cabora. The stories I heard about her. Yeah, my mother read to me definitely. I was a big reader. I read everything I could read, and my brother Juan, he was my half brother, my older half brother, but he was a big reader too. And he would pass his used paperback books through my dad to me. So I ended up getting a little library thanks to my brother, which was really cool. And my mom, you know, we didn't have a lot of money, but she was smart enough to get me a library card. And so I could read. And with the library card, it was free. You know, I didn't quite understand. I didn't own those books. I just was borrowing them. But those things... And early in my career, I was sort of taken in and mentored a bit by Rudolfo Anaya, El Gran Rudy, and Bless Me Ultima and his book Tortuga were two really important books to me. And he's always been a kind of a tío to me, you know. He's been very generous with me over the years. So I've just been quite lucky, I think, with influences.
Well, Bless Me Ultima was also read here for the Big Read about 7 years ago. How did you feel when the National Endowment for the Arts contacted you to tell you Into the Beautiful North was selected for this year's Big Read?
Well, it's been a Big Read for several years now. It was interesting because I'd been doing stuff with the NEA before. I was one of the judges giving the award, and I was one of the judges giving the NEA to publishers as well. And even 1 year when Rudy wasn't feeling well, I went on the road and represented him in Aspen. So we had been doing stuff together, and when they called suddenly with the surprise news that they wanted to take Beautiful North, I, of course, was thrilled because it means that whole cities read your book. Whole colleges or schools at least, but often whole cities. And it's given me the chance to be the first author that a lot of Latino kids have ever read and certainly met. And that is, you know, that's a gift from heaven. You can't have a better thing than that happen.
So you call yourself a Latino author, not a Chicano author?
No, hombre, they call us Latino. I always tell them, really? Latino? I don't speak Latin. That's the term people use. Yeah, I say Mexicano. I say Chicano. Though I got to say, when I was growing up, you know, the terminology for Chicano was pretty precise. A Mexicano born in the U.S., and that wasn't me. And, you know, the movement was funny because at first they were a little bit like, you're not a Chicano, you're a Tijuanero. But the guys in Mexico were like, no, hombre, eres un pocho. And I thought, well, okay, to heck with everybody. I'll just march under my own flag. But then by the time I was in college, I felt kind of resolved, you know, because the raza definitely embraced me. And here we are.
Well, Into the Beautiful North, you're going to be talking about that here at New Mexico State University.
Yeah.
Next week, Tuesday, March the 13th at 7:30 p.m. at the ASNMSU Center for the Arts. And as well as New Mexico State University, you're going to be visiting other communities that selected your book, right?
Yeah.
Like
mm-hmm.
in Michigan State University, Stillwater, Minnesota, and Lancaster, Pennsylvania. You're going to be very busy.
You would not believe it. If you go on my website and look at the calendar, I've got this... Completely
I did.
So you saw I have this crazy tour for the new book, and I'm doing the NEA stuff and other stuff. So, you know, it's what you sign up for. So here we go. It's kind of like getting into the literary Super Bowl all of a sudden.
Well, before we go into your new book, let's finish this one, since you're going to be here next week. This is going to air on this Saturday. And I just want to know, what is the most significant thing about Into the Beautiful North that you would like our community to embrace?
You know, I consciously wrote that book to be subversive, in that I wanted it to be sort of a popular entertainment with characters that, as one of my actor friends says, force readers to fall in love with them. I was very conscious about doing that because I thought, if I can write a book about a group of undocumented young women who brave the U.S. border to come and find people to come back to their village to help them combat narcos, that the American public, who was getting more and more rabidly anti-Mexicanos, would find themselves rooting for these women, even though they have all this anti-immigrant rhetoric going on. And then I thought, well, if I'm going to do that, I think I'll make their best friend and traveling companion a young gay Mexicano. Again, because people seem so dead set against young gay men in our culture right now. And then finally I thought, well, why don't I throw in a cholo? Why don't I throw in a crazy Tijuana cholo and call him Atomico and make him a wild character that would scare all the ladies in the book clubs if they met him, but they might end up admiring if they read about him. And those things came true. You know, I visit lots of book clubs, and those lovely women always say, we like that atomic boy very much. And I say, ma'am, if he came in here right now, you'd jump out the window. But, you know, I think that it's something that Anaya told me. He said, you know, if you can make your abuelita the grandmother of a reader somewhere in Iowa, then you committed a serious religious and political act. And I kept that in mind. If I could make these characters mean everything to people on a princess cruise somewhere, you know, drinking a rum drink and saying, build the wall, that would be a very powerful act.
Well, we'll talk about build the wall another time. Let's.
Better not talk about it. I'm not really fond of that.
Well, I want to again congratulate you on your new book, The House of Broken Angels.
Yeah.
And let's go into it. You spoke briefly right now about your oldest half-brother, Juan Urrea.
Yeah, Juan.
And this is what this book is based on, correct?
Yes, Juan's death, yeah.
And it takes place in one weekend, a birthday party or a celebration?
Yeah, the book's in three parts. The first part is the death of Big Angel's mother. And the second part is sort of back in history of some of Big Angel's boyhood, and then the third act is Big Angel's last birthday party on Earth. But it all takes place in 2 days.
But this is based on a true story, though, right?
Yes, it is.
Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah. My brother Juan died 3 years ago in February, and he had been battling cancer for a while. And, you know, he was kind of a hero to me, of course. And when that event was closing in on him, he had decided with some of the family members to give himself a birthday party. He was turning 74, and he knew, I think, pretty much to the day maybe when he was going to die, but nobody else knew. Everybody knew he was going to die. And so Juan had this amazing, super Chicano farewell party where every kind of Mexicano imaginable came to this place and to his house. And, you know, people paid their respects. And he was able to receive all this praise and love before he left.
And this was in
San Diego.
So this is quite an emotional thing for you then, right? This book. How long did it take you to write it?
I worked on it for about 2 years.
And who are the broken angels?
The two brothers, the fictional brothers, Big Angel and Little Angel.
And why do you say they're broken?
Well, dying of cancer isn't being whole, that's for sure. But I think the border experience can be very hard on people. And part of the point of the book is, how does a man with only days to live fix all the things in the family that he wants to fix before he's torn away from them? And how does the younger man who's been alienated from that family and far away from them find his way back in to make peace with his brother? So it's just all about what families go through.
And who was the younger brother?
That's Little Angel de la Cruz. Big Angel de la Cruz isn't Juan Urrea, he's Angel de la Cruz, Miguel Angel de la Cruz. But, you know, that being said, of course our experiences, you know, fueled those characters. I could extrapolate from feelings we all had. I certainly could extrapolate from that party, you know, and fictionalize it. And again, there's specific Trumpism in this book because it's that era now. And so, you know, there are people holding up build the wall signs in the background sometimes. And there's a scene where Little Angel is, his lifelong crush is on a woman in the family named La Gloriosa. She's the sister of Big Angel's wife. And they go shopping at Target and they're having this beautiful day. And suddenly a woman walks up to her and says, our president is going to throw you out of the country soon. So that little vibe is in the background. And, you know, I felt this is our time to use our art to stand up and stop it, stop that kind of thing. And I thought, you know, I'm going to try to write the great American novel, the great epic American novel. Is it going to be about Mexicanos? See what y'all think about that. It's, I'm a little overwhelmed, honestly, because the pre-publication response has just been crazy. So I'm gearing up because we're leaving my wife and me this week on book tour. It's going to be, as you know, crazy out there. A lot of events.
So your wife has helped you a lot on your tours, and you've been married how long?
20 years.
And you have children?
Yes, we have 3 kids.
What do you tell your children about the books you read, the books you write, the books that they should read or write?
Well, you know, it's an interesting thing. I think being the kids of an author, they weren't around for the struggle part. You know, they've been around for the, hey, dad's doing okay part. And it's really, it makes me really happy because they've grown up with artists. They've grown up with authors and musicians. You know, it's, they can't imagine the life before. You know, my son is friends with Los Lobos, you know. It's amazing to me. That was not possible for me. Or my daughter, my youngest daughter, has truly benefited more than the other two. She's always been around authors and creative people and on the road and traveling, you know. And it's incredible. So they have their own interests and their own tastes, but, you know, I try to share with them influences, all the things that I wished for. And out of the 3 kids, he's a touring rock and roll drummer in a successful band. And La Jovencita, Chayo, I think, you know, she's about to go to college. So it's pretty cool.
A proud father. And do you tell them what your greatest passion, besides being a writer and a professor, has been? Was there something else that you've done in your life which has given you some great satisfaction and pride, again, besides your children?
Oh, yeah, I could speak all day about that. I used to work in Tijuana with the poor for years, in the Tijuana garbage dump with indigenous people who were having to pick trash to survive. I used to work in orphanages and, you know, take Christmas to prisoners in Tijuana. That means a lot to me. And I was an actor, and that gave me a lot of joy as well. And it helps for me on tour or when I'm recording the audiobooks because I'm used to acting. So that's kind of nice.
Would you like to go back into that, into acting?
No, not really. I'm where I'm supposed to be. It helps me because I live my life in front of audiences of strangers, you know, every month, at least twice, sometimes 3 times a month. I'm out there somewhere talking to people I don't know. So that training has helped me very much to do it, and I enjoy it. It's fun. It's to a higher cause for me.
So you're going to be continuing on with the House of Broken Angels, going on tour with this new book. And again, many accolades. Congratulations on that.
Thank you. Thank you.
Are you already working on another book or project?
Yeah, I was in the middle of another book when my brother died. I dropped that book to finish this, so I'm back working on that.
Can you talk a little bit about it?
It's going to surprise my readers in a way. It's a World War II epic about some women that served in World War II that I know, and the story never told before. So I'm kind of excited that I can offer a World War II epic that no one's heard about. That's, my publisher is excited, too.
Oh, that's great. So, well, we look forward to that as well. And again, it's been a great pleasure and an honor talking to you, Luis Alberto Urrea, one of our best-selling authors of fiction, nonfiction, poetry, Into the Beautiful North and The House of Broken Angels, and many, many other books, and a Pulitzer Prize finalist for the true story, The Devil's Highway. Muchas gracias.
Thank you, Emily.
You're welcome. And we look forward to seeing you in Las Cruces when you come out.
Same here. I'm excited.
For KRWG, I'm Emily Guerra.